Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the show where we talk to writers, get to know them a little bit better through a series of five questions. This has been a lot of fun. This whole podcast, I think we're on our 14th or 15th episode now, and it's just been very enlightening and a lot of fun to get to know writers in this format. So I hope you would agree that I have a wonderful guest here today. Someone I've gotten to know pretty well, I think, over the last year and a half, 2 years or so. My guest today is Marco Caracari. Hi, Marco.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am still on cloud nine from my release day yesterday, so I'm feeling good.
That's awesome. Well, yes, it's very, very exciting. Your first book ever. Well, your first fiction book ever coming out.
There was a photo book a while back, no text really. But yeah, my first book, you can say that.
Yeah. It's a first. For sure. And it's called Blackout. And we'll talk about Blackout. So yeah. Marco grew up in Switzerland, where he, over the past 50 odd years, worked in a hardware store, traveled the globe working for the airlines, and later as an internationally published photographer, and frequently jobbed as a waiter, hotel receptionist, or manager of a professional photo studio. In 2016, he swapped snow-capped mountains, lakes, and lush green pastures for the charm of the dry California desert, where he lives with his husband. Blackout, which we were just talking about, is his first novel, and it made its way into the world yesterday, Tuesday, March
30th.
Well, that's a lucky day. So how are you feeling from that? Just give us a brief overview of what happened yesterday and how it went.
I feel very good. I really was not sure it was going to be a big deal, because I'd reached out to, you know, all sorts of places to try and figure out if we could do like a virtual launch or like a Facebook Live or something, and nothing worked out. So I had very low expectations at this point, and I thought, you know, it's fine. It'll be what it'll be. But people were fantastic. A lot of people, other writers, my friends, complete strangers that I'm just getting to know now, reached out, congratulated me, tweeted, posted stuff on Instagram and Facebook, or retweeted some stuff. We made a video. Mark made me make a video of basically the book launch, where we were trying to be funny and have a crying baby, and that's the thing that keeps me up at night. And so we put that all together the night before, very last minute, got great responses, lots of retweets. So yeah, I was just overwhelmed by the very positive reaction that people have given me. And so I'm still in a fantastic mood.
Yay. Yeah, I saw the video. That was really cute. Because at first I was like, what is this? I'm like, that's hilarious. But you know, everyone should go find that on your socials. It's very, very cute, a very well-produced, the birth of the book video. I loved it. Thought it was great. Well, tell everyone a little bit about what Blackout is about.
Blackout is the Franco DiMaso story. Franco is a 43-year-old photographer in New York City who's a little bit in a rut. He's also someone who doesn't really break out of his comfort zone too often. And then the one night he finally does, where he decides, okay, I want to have some fun, and hooks up with a complete stranger who happens to bring a joint that he's not aware is laced, things get a little out of control. He becomes a witness to a murder across the street, but he's the only one, and he also has a very strong allergic reaction to the joint, and things kind of go downhill from there. And next thing he remembers, he wakes up on the street, the cops are here, he must have called them, and he remembers some stuff, but there is something missing. And when they don't find a body, no crime scene, of course, they don't believe him. It's not the best interaction between him and law enforcement. And it takes several days for him to question himself. Did I really see what I saw? What happened? But by the time a body finally does show up and the cops connect the dots, he goes from very unreliable witness to prime suspect, of course. And things deteriorate further. Especially after it turns out that current events, present day, connect 40 years earlier to the homicide that occurred when he was just 4 years old, and someone killed his father right in front of him just before the New York City blackout hit in 1977.
Yes, so you have dual blackouts, the very personal blackout from being, you know, a little wasted and yep. the big blackout that happened. So that's very cool how they got all tied together. Yes, Blackout, everyone should get it. It's a great book. Okay, the first official question of the interview, even though I've already asked like seven. How did your writing career get started, Marco?
I'd say it started officially 8 years ago when I decided to take on this adventure. But I've written all my life just for myself. Like most people, I guess, who get into writing at some point, my teacher discovered that I had a passion for writing very early on, and she really tried to cultivate that. So whenever we did something in school or in class that we were not supposed to do, we'd get additional homework, which was penance, basically. And everybody else had to do real crappy stuff, and I had to write her a new fresh story because she thought I'd have a career in journalism. So she was really hell-bent on getting me into that, and I opposed her every step of the way, and sure enough, went into a completely different, can't even call that a career. I had some very interesting choices as far as work was related after school, but I loved writing, and I was afraid that if I had to do it 24/7, I'd lose my interest and the joy in it. And so I didn't do it, and just kind of stuck with it for many, many years, and kept somewhat of a journal while I was traveling, working for Swiss Air when I was an airline steward. And then 8 years ago, found an old manuscript that was hilariously horrible. And it was just so funny to see where I was when I wrote it at 22 and where I was now, you know, at 45 at the time. And I thought, I can do better than this. And I think I want to try to do better. So that's when I started, and I kept working on it. Also had the realization or foresight or whatever that I needed help. I needed to become a better writer. I started taking all these classes and started visiting crime fiction conventions and learned a lot and kept working on the book. And here we are now, almost 8 years later.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we're here. So I'm glad you stuck with it. It's funny because we've had, you know, we've had a lot of conversations over the last year or two, and we've had very similar sort of, we've had a lot of similar experiences. And I worked for an airline as well. I worked for a cargo airline, but and I wrote that bad stuff back in the 20s, you know, and I was always assuming that you couldn't really write a really well until you had lived more. And that was just always in my head, like, you know, I don't, what does a 20-year-old have to say that hasn't been heard 100 times before? You know what I mean? Like, I think I just feel like life experiences sort of had to gather first before we could be really profound, but that's just me. Everyone should write every day. Just go ahead and do it.
I need to get better about that myself.
Yes. We just talked about just stopping ourselves from stopping. Stop stopping. Yeah. Okay. If you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
To chill that bleep out, I think. I am a worrier and I stress about stuff. And I think I have that from my mom, who always made sure, or still always wants to make sure everyone's okay. Everybody, she always put herself last. And I unfortunately have that trait in me, or had that trait in me for many, many years. I always put everyone else always first, and always felt like I wasn't enough. I needed to do more to make others happy. And that is a tremendous amount of stress on yourself. And I think everybody else who is maybe similar would know this and say, oh yeah, I remember. It took me almost 43 years to get over that. So I've been working on it, and I'm still working on it. But I am also a bit of a, try to be a bit of a perfectionist with the photography as much as the writing. In photography, I used to be responsible for everything in the sense that, you know, you create the project, or you plan on a project, and then you follow through, and then you sit down, everything goes in the computer, and now that we're doing it all digitally, and then you have to do the editing, the retouching, and then if it goes to print, and if you have a chance to oversee that, you're there to see that it's exactly the way you want it, the colors are right, you have to proof it. And I want to kind of do the same in the writing. And in writing, I think my issue often was, clearly English is not my first language. I every now and again stumble over words. There's a bit of an accent, of course. I always wonder, you know, am I saying this exactly right? Because I want it to sound like an American had written it, like an American wrote it, that you could say, yeah, okay, this does not read like it's written by a foreigner. And so that is all very important to me. And I try to do them as much as I can, but then I start to worry about what is this person gonna think? What is that person gonna think? And it just kind of drives me nuts. So in all these different stages of my life and all the different aspects of my life, I am trying to let go more and enjoy life more and not stress myself out with these things. Now I realize there is a lot of help by, of course, now having you guys, Level Best and you, Sean, and specifically to help me if I have questions or if I am not sure about a direction in writing. That really is very helpful to have someone with a lot more experience to tell you, no, this is good, or yes, you should look at this and this. Because before it was just me, which I'm guessing is true for most writers. It's you and then you do your thing and you worry about stuff. You want to make sure that you're perceived well when you step out into the world with it. So sadly, it's not just writing, it's everything in my life. So I'm trying to mute that all a little bit and just get more relaxed about everything and realize I don't have control over everything, and that is perfectly fine and acceptable.
Yeah. We also have this in common. I think it's, you know, I know for myself, it's when I'm in charge of a lot of different projects at once, and the managing the chaos is, you know, the anxiety to make everything perfect. It's dealing with anxiety of like, what could go wrong? What could not go wrong? What's good? What's not good? And every single writer sits in a room by themselves with their screen and their imposter, you know, syndrome and anxiety over that too. I think everyone does, you know, everyone's like, I wrote a book that I think everyone's gonna like. Am I crazy? Is everyone gonna like this? Remember the first time I wrote anything, I'm like, is this any good? I don't know, I can't tell. But then it's sort of like you have to wait for that feedback to come back. But yeah. It's everyone, it's not just you. Luckily, it's not just us, luckily, I think, unless it's just the two of us and the whole, I don't think that's true. Okay, so my next question is, what is the most difficult part of the creative writing process for you? And then what is the easiest?
The most difficult part of the creative writing process for me right now is to actually sit down and just write. I have a really hard time. But in the grander scheme, if I write crime fiction, and I would love to write a queer protagonist, whatever that is going to be, for a police procedural, which I don't really see too many. There are some people now doing it. I'm sure there were people doing it before, but you didn't really see too much of it. Also, I think a lot of books with queer protagonists were very much a niche market. And it seems only now, again, after the 80s and 90s, there are more and more publishing houses who say, we want diversity, we want more of those stories. And so you see all these wonderful books pop up in mainstream. But the difficult process for me in crime fiction writing and police procedural would be, I don't have a knowledge of it. So I've educated myself as much as I can. I constantly talk to people who are in or were in law enforcement. And of course, they don't always have the time to answer all your questions. So I read a lot of books, and yet I still am not sure I know enough to pull it off. As a very avid reader, I read a lot of police procedurals because it's something I'm very fascinated by and interested in. And I frequently see people who get it right, that read very believable. And I'm like, oh, this is great how they did this. Not so much in the details, but perhaps the amount of details that are necessary to make it believable so that you can say, oh, this is a great book because it's a fantastic story, but it's also believable. It's not raising a million questions where you're saying this could not happen, that could not happen. So that's very difficult for me, and it's kind of hampering my creativity. And the easiest part for me usually is dialogue. For some reason, maybe because I talk so much, but I just said yesterday to for another interview, I listened to myself. I said to Brad Treif from Queer Writers of Crime, I said, geez, somebody put a cork in me. But the easiest part really is dialogue. It comes very natural to me and very easily. And it's something I enjoy to do. And I'm happy that that is the case, because when you write a story, there's inevitably you have these parts that are harder to do, or the story gets stuck and then you're getting frustrated, and it might take you several weeks. I've pondered what to do next, and then finally I had the solution and I went forward with it. The dialogues always come really easy to me, and so that's always a joy to do, because if nothing else and you're stuck over here, you can work on a scene where you you show what's happening and you have characters talk to each other, and that usually flows quite quickly for me.
Yeah, you're very good with dialogue, and I don't think, as your editor, I don't think I had very many suggestions as to change anything about your dialogues. It was very natural and varied, which I think is a big mistake. A lot of authors don't, you know, change the way other characters speak, so everyone kind of sounds the same after a while. And you didn't do that at all. But I think I'm just guessing, because we both had a lot of jobs that where you deal with the public, you know, customer service type, kind of you're in with people. And when you have to talk to a lot of different people all the time, you sort of pick up on those different rhythms of speech, and, you know, and I think it informs your writing very much. I think you're good at that too.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I try to get better.
Yeah. Well, we can all be better, but not perfect. Remember, we're trying not to be perfect all the time.
Yeah.
So which comes first for you, the plot or the characters? I have a guess about this one, but I want to hear what you have to say about that.
I think plot is very important. And I start writing a story when I feel I know where it's going, whether or not I'm right. But character is the key for me. And I'm actually very, very happy to hear that a lot of people who already have written reviews, who gave me blurbs, fellow authors who are very generous with their blurbs and stuff, a lot of people have already commented on the fact that they love the characters, that they immediately connected to them, that they felt that even secondary characters were not just flat, but I managed to breathe life into them. And that to me is one of the highest compliments, because that was what I was trying to do. I wanted them to be three-dimensional. And believe me, they were not always as three-dimensional as they are today. When I first wrote the book, it was a lot more of a comedy. It was a lot more of a, you know, kind of breezing through all these horrible situations and quick, funny replies here and another quick, fun remark there, being, you know, kind of deadpanning a lot and having a dry wit going through the entire book. And I enjoyed that a lot, but it also lacked the heart and the depth that I had always wanted, but somehow didn't pull off the first few attempts. And so I had to go back and make sure that the characters take over. There are many, many parts in the story, and you might remember, because I actually cut several parts and pieces and even one-liners and all that sort of stuff the last time we edited, that just went, because I realized, no, this character is feeling this and this and this. He's not going to be a smartass about this and then have this, you know, fun retort here. He just went through this really horrifying or whatever experience, and he's going to be affected by this. And he can joke about it later if it still makes sense to have the character say a certain thing that's a little tongue-in-cheek or facetious, then you can do that later. But right now, the character needs to feel what I think I would feel, or what I believe the character would feel. And so that they really took over. And I hope, but also believe, that Blackout is very character-driven. And it'll be interesting to see what future reviewers find, if they connect the same way. But that's what I keep hearing right now, and it makes me very happy and proud, because that was what I wanted, for people to connect with the characters and say, I care about these people. And they're all flawed. Nobody's perfect because that's the world. I didn't want any perfect people or any kind of heroes. I wanted anti-heroes. I wanted everybody to be a dick at one point and disappoint another person at least once or twice in the story, or Franco disappoints people all the time and himself. And that's what life is about. That's who we are.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would totally agree with all of that. It's a very character-driven story, and also a bit of a love letter to New York City, which is nice. That's nice for, I used to live there. So when I was reading it, I thought, oh yeah, you know, just remembering the good, the bad, the hot, the smelly, the wonderful, you know, the bright lights. And so there's also that piece too, which is nice. But, you know, Def, for sure, it's the characters, you know, that highlight all of those. It's like their scenery is nice too.
Thank you.
So this is the debut of the fifth question, and this is a surprise one. And I, it's perfect, perfect, perfect for you. So I tend to save the fifth question to be something kind of off the wall that maybe doesn't have to do with writing. And this one for you is, which three songs would be on your life's playlist? You have to narrow it down to three.
and you know, the funny thing is, I mean, the entire book is full of song references, of course, because I love music and I listen to music all the time. And it's been a major part of my life. Okay, well, definitely one song is going to be, oh, great. And now, of course, I'm totally blanking on titles.
You can sing, you can just start singing.
No, yeah, that would be so much worse. But okay, number one, and no particular order.
How about I Will Survive, Gloria Gaynor? No, that's not one. Is that one?
No.
Okay. I'll just start naming random song titles. Well, why don't you start with what's on the playlist in Blackout? Because that's the reason I asked you, because this was the coolest thing. You came up with a playlist for the book. So what's on that playlist? Do any of those cross over into this question?
Right. Okay, so definitely one of my absolutely favorite songs is Chaka Khan's version. It's not her original, but Chaka Khan's version of Love Has Fallen on Me. I think that's just such an amazing song from her debut album, also Chaka Khan or Chaka.
I love that song too.
It's so hard.
Maybe Blackout's life playlist. Well, you already have one, so you're one down.
I have, yeah. So number one, Love Has Fallen on Me, Chaka Khan. I would say Simplify by Omar, although I love a lot of his stuff, but that's one of the songs that really just kind of pops into my head right now. And really anything by Brenda Russell, I love her, but I'll say New York Bars because it's on the playlist in on Blackout. I think she's an amazing writer and singer, and should get a lot more due than I think she's been given.
Well, very cool. And like, I will share those songs for this podcast. We can put the songs on there and the link to the Blackout playlist, which is so cool. It's just neat. Well, I love music too. I used to play music, and my son plays guitar, drums, clarinet. You know, we're a musical family. We always have music on in the house. And so that piece was really cool for me because I could hear the songs when they were in, you know, the different scenes of the book. I'm like, oh yeah, that's such a great song. So, but there's different music for different points of your day and moods. And, you know, there's songs for going out, there's songs for chilling, there's songs for cooking. For me, I love music when I'm cooking and wine. So yeah, I love that you intertwined it so well into the book. And then the playlist was a really cool idea. I love that.
Yeah. I was hoping that either there are a lot of people who say, oh, I remember this song. Oh, this is great. Especially if you have a more mature crowd of like my age, 52 or older, who are like, oh, I remember these songs. A lot of them, my music tastes lie very heavily in the 70s and 80s specifically, but also 60s, 50s. And today, the music I listen to today, the last decade or so, a lot of the writers and singers produce music that actually sounds a lot like it could have been done in the 80s. And apart from all the R&B, soul, and funk, which I'm a huge fan of. I also love this whole California sort of soundtrack, the Laurel Canyon music scene, and then yacht rock, which was late, you know, 70s, 80s, with all these great performers. I'm a huge fan of that and listen to a lot of music. And there's this singer that's been around a while. He's Dutch. He's called Benny Sings. And his last album, and I think the new one coming, have such a West Coast 70s vibe to them. It's fantastic. I love it. But it's brand new music. But other than that, my husband's always like, Jesus, nobody knows what you're listening to. I'm like, that's just because you have a very narrow mind when it comes to music. So I had to kind of reintroduce him to some stuff that he was not listening to, because we have different tastes.
Yeah. I like rock and roll. I'm an alternative rock person, but I also, you know, I grew up in the disco. My mom was a disco, you know. We're the same age, is what I'm saying. But like, I love Leon Bridges. And somebody, you listen to Leon Bridges, some songs, you're like, is this Sam Cooke? You know, because it sounds a lot like they're referencing back to, you know, different periods. It's sort of like everything comes back around again. The styles, you know, the style never really goes away. But it's so exciting to listen to new artists coming up and that are, you know, they're doing their own thing, but you can guess some of their influences and references and music they must have been, you know, grown up with. And it's just why it's always, I just love anything creative, obviously, but music is just so magical to me. Yeah, so very cool. Well, I knew that you were gonna master that question. Sorry I put you on the spot. I think it's like, you know, when you put a child down in a room with like 100 toys, they just sit there and do nothing because they just don't know which way to go. You know, if you give them 3 toys and they're happier. That's just life. It's the way our brains are. Just too much choice.
Yeah. It happens all the time. And then especially, here I didn't have an excuse, but sometimes I talk to someone and I actually think in English, not in German now. That's why I guess blah, 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 it goes so fast. But then of course, every now and again, there is a word I don't remember, or I'm looking for something and then it's just blank. I can't think of the English word. I can't think of the German word. I could act out, you know, the word perhaps, or to etch a sketch or something like this. And if you're in the middle of an interview, that's not ideal, but it happens.
Yeah. Media training. Okay. A real rapid fire quiz. There's no wrong answers. Actually, all the answers are wrong. So don't worry about it. Number one, beach or mountains?
Beach.
Okay. I thought you might be of two minds because...
I am of two minds, but because I'm in the desert and I never really... We go to Idlewild a lot, so we do love the mountains and be great to have a cabin up there someday. But because I never get to see the beach, I do miss the beach. I love the beach, so I guess I'm going with beach right now.
Me too. I'm a beach girl. Cake or pie?
Cake.
Morning person or night owl?
Probably more of a morning person these days. Used to not be that way, but morning person, I'd say.
Yeah, you kind of shift over your lifespan, I think, too. We all end up going to bed at like 8 o'clock eventually. dogs or cats?
Dogs.
You have a dog? Do you have a dog?
No, we're the only ones in the neighborhood, I think, that do not have a dog. Everybody else does have one. But, you know, we're uncles to a lot of dogs, of our friends and neighbors, so... It takes a lot of responsibility to have a pet in general, but especially dogs. I feel you need to be there to raise them and to raise them right, make sure that they are a dog, but they also have their limits. And we still want to travel. We want to do stuff. It wouldn't be fair. You have to have the time to invest. And so dog, maybe one day, but not today. I grew up with dogs, but I haven't had one in decades.
Yeah, we lost our last one 2 years ago, and it's just, we took a break because, you know, same thing. It's like I was in 2019, I was away almost every month, and it gets to be tough. Although this year would have been like perfect. We didn't go anywhere for a year and a half or whatever. Okay. So coffee or tea?
Coffee, espresso in the morning.
Ah, very good. Yes. You emailed me. So you have to have your espresso before we could talk.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You are not lying.
Well, the time difference, and I still sound a little hoarse, but the time difference, of course, I'm like, oh, 10 o'clock is fine. I'm like, wait a second, that's 7 my time. Oh my gosh, I've been up a half hour. I don't think I'm presentable, so.
Yeah, we have author. You're out in California. We have a number of authors in California, and then I work with authors in the middle of the country, and now we have a bunch of European. So I never know what time it is. I'm just like, hey, you all got to be on New York time because I can't do the math. I don't do math, and I don't do math anyway. I definitely don't do that kind of math. So, okay, so now I need to know what's going on with you next. What are you working on? I know you're not writing actively at the moment, but you have a bunch of. Do you have a bunch of promo things coming up? Are you? Where can we find you? Where can we see you next?
I will definitely update my webpage as it goes along. So this was my currently last interview for a few weeks. And then I have a PR company who's really working hard on getting me some other engagements. So that will definitely go up on the page. And then I am booked on the Rote podcast. I believe it's July 14th, 17th. And then it airs sometime after. They have not given me the air date, just the record date, but I'm very much looking forward to that. And then I am really, really trying hard to get back into writing. I'm very happy to have my short story, All in the Planning, come out in the Malice Domestic Mystery Most Diabolical pretty soon. And then I have another short story submitted to a contest that would be super cool to be included in. I'm not sure how that's going to go. We'll see. And either get my ass back to writing on the sequel to Blackout, which is fully lined out. I know exactly where it's going. I just have to write it. And I always say sequels are that thing, you know, you want The Empire Strikes Back, not Wonder Woman 2.
Right.
You want something that everybody's excited about and goes, oh, they raised the bar, and not like, what the hell? But I'm not maybe being all that fair. Wonder Woman 2 was actually enjoyable. I enjoyed it, but the first one was definitely much better movie for me.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens. I'm working on a completely new thing that I worked on last year for several months that is indeed a police procedural, something I always wanted to do, but I feel I need to know a lot more about police procedural to confidently write that story. That would actually, it's planned to be an actual series. If that works out, if I do a good job, if someone's interested in publishing that, that is set up to be a series someday, hopefully. Whereas Franco and His Friends, there is definitely a sequel in the making, and especially if people are interested and love the book and want it, maybe a third one, but you know, I really didn't want to do this as a series to begin with. Mm-hmm. I always thought, like in real life, there is going to be another story to tell, but I write mysteries or suspense, and so I need to make sure that it actually ticks off all the boxes that still work for that to happen. Franco's story is not finished at the end of this book. It's wrapped up, and I think it's a satisfying ending, but there are repercussions to everything that happened, especially to what he went through. And I think there's a very logical sequel in a not too distant future, I hope. And I'm working on that as well. So that'd be nice to bring out at some point.
Absolutely. Well, you're busy, and we're just really excited for you, and we're really excited about the book. So everyone go get Blackout. You won't be sorry. It's wonderful. I loved it. And I read it like 4 times. Okay. Well, have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for
being on the show.